And good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Deal Hudson, president of the Morley Institute of Church and Culture, talking about great Christmas films on this special edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, our Christmas Eve edition. We've been just bouncing around, talking about some of the great Christmas films that are out there. There's enduring films that we all know about. Miracle on 34th Street, It's a Wonderful Life. They reappear every year. Earlier, we had talked about A Christmas Carol. Your favorite is the 1938 version starring Reginald Owen. And there have been so many additions made of that that people are often confused as to, you know, how do they select among the many versions of it. Now, I usually think about it in terms of my kids, because usually we watch these things together. So I say, well, what do I think's going to hold their attention to begin with, you know? And I hate to say it, but really it's usually later films that manage to hold their attention. And yet you recommend 1938. So talk to me why that's important.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, as you know, I have a 16-year-old son named Cyprian.
Chip.
And I got him over this kind of generational aversion to both black and white films and subtitled films by first taking him to their presentation on the big screen.
Yeah.
Because a great black and white film from the heyday of Hollywood, whether it's silent or 30s or 40s, has incredible beauty to it.
It does.
Beauty which you cannot see on your home television.
And you forget it. You forget that it's black and white when you're there, in the sense that you don't feel deprived.
No, and you know, the hardest thing for a flat screen TV to show are black tones.
Yeah.
Black and gray are the hardest thing to show. But when you see it on a big screen, all of a sudden you realize the amazing artistry that went into lighting, designing, and filming these black and white films. I know that when I was watching the 1938 Christmas Carol just the other day, I was just noticing how beautifully they had created snow in the studio.
Huh.
I mean, I was just looking for any kind of flub to betray that it wasn't real snow, but I couldn't.
You couldn't. Yeah.
And it was beautifully textured. Now, another wonderful example of that, of a film that has to be seen to be believed on a big screen, is The Shop Around the Corner from 1940 with Jimmy Stewart. And The Shop Around the Corner is a very famous film with Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan, directed by Ernst Lubitsch, who is known for having what's called the Lubitsch touch. And what that meant was he was always looked upon as someone who could translate to screen a touch of magic and romance in the way in which love and romance transform a given occasion. And here, what's so wonderful about this film is the story. You have a young man, young woman, who both work in a shop, a clothing store, who on the surface of it hate each other, but they're both looking for a boyfriend, girlfriend, and they start corresponding with each other anonymously, not knowing
they're pen pals, and they don't know that
they don't know, and so they are they're about to find out that they don't hate each other, but the way in which this is unfolded narratively and on the screen and during the season of Christmas, I mean, this is really one of my favorite movies of all time, The Shop Around the Corner, 1940, Jimmy Stewart, Margaret Sullivan, directed by Ernst Lubitsch. Has wonderful character actors, Frank Morgan, you know, who play the wizard in The Wizard of Oz, and many others whose face you would recognize. And you talk up. This may be the first classic Hollywood film I ever saw on the big screen. I think I saw it back in the 70s in New York City when I was a graduate student, and I realized right then and there the only way to really appreciate these great Hollywood classics is to see them on a big screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because their beauty does not reveal itself on any kind of television I know of.
Well, I fell in love with Casablanca on the big screen. I saw it probably late 1980s or something. And everybody, it was one of those things that everybody had said, this is a great film, this is a great film, this is a great film. And I knew, well, it probably is a great film if so many people say it is, but I never connected with it. And then for some reason or other,
Not for some reason. Well, you had never seen it.
You had never really seen it. Exactly. And somebody invited me to the, I think it was the Redford Theater, just outside of Detroit. They were showing classic films on Saturday afternoons. So I had some time. I went to see it. And I said, I get it. I see what, I see what this was all about.
They're like fine paintings. All of us have art books that we open up and we look at paintings in. But we know the difference between looking at a painting and looking at the real thing.
That's right.
That's really the difference between watching one of these 30s, 40s black and white films on a TV versus the big screen.
Right.
You see, these...
It's like looking at a piece of art.
The men and women who made these films were great artists. They were great, great artists. And the cinematographers, the art directors, the costumers... The Hollywood system had its, of course, problems in terms of how it treated people, especially artists. But the level of artistry that they achieved between roughly the mid-20s and the mid-40s has not been paralleled anywhere in the world.
You and I have talked in the past about how many outstanding directors were formed as Catholics, Ford, Capra, Hitchcock.
We have Hitchcock, Ford, Fellini, Scorsese, Jean Renoir, Coppola, François Truffaut, Louis Buñuel, Fritz Lang.
Robert Bresson?
Robert Borzaghi. Frank Capra. I mean, the list goes on and on. And Frank, this is one reason Frank Capra made It's a Wonderful Life. In fact, he had to sell that to the studios. I mean, he had to put his neck out to get that made.
Any thoughts on why we had so many outstanding Catholic directors and filmmakers then? They certainly don't seem to be as many now. I mean, Scorsese's still around, but he's more kind of Christ haunted, I think, God haunted than he is really, you know.
I think he'd probably agree with that.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
I admire Scorsese so much because, for one thing, he is a great lover of the history and tradition. He's spending a lot of money out of his pocket to save films before they go into oblivion, especially the silent film. But his Last Temptation of Christ was just a mess, in my opinion.
It was.
To this day, I don't understand
it. It was so bad. It was funny in places.
And I hope he never hears me say that because I do respect the man. I do think he, but I think it shows that his own confusion about, you know, what the Catholic faith is.
Yeah, I mean, not only was the theology bad, but it just led to silliness.
It did,
and it was hard to take.
All those
seriously.
Brooklyn accents from Disciples was very
Harvey
hard
Keitel.
To take. Very hard to say. But I think that, you know, you ask the question of where are the Catholic directors now? First of all, there are Catholic directors there who are working out of their faith. But you can't do that in Hollywood now in a way that becomes part of your public identity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It has to be something that you do quietly and privately, and it happens just as substantially. It's just that you don't go out there and say, okay, I'm a Catholic director, and here's this film I've made that bears the stamp of my Catholic sensibility.
But they didn't do that in the past, though. Hitchcock certainly didn't run around saying that, did he? I'm a Catholic director.
No, he didn't, and neither did Capra. Ford, I mean, whenever Ford or Capra or Borzaghi was asked about it, they didn't in any way try to back away from it. Either did Hitchcock. Once he became a subject of study as a director, and Truffaut was the one who wrote the groundbreaking book on Hitchcock, but we now live in an age where what we could call the comfort that Catholics felt in their own skin back in the 30s and 40s is gone. So someone who is a Catholic filmmaker, like a Borzaghi or a Ford or a Capra, never felt the necessity of declaring themselves such because their Catholic identity was something that they were not alienated from. And certainly society and artistic circles were not alienated from it either. Mm-hmm. In fact, Catholics and Jews in Hollywood collaborated on some of the best religious films ever made.
I've noticed that.
Right.
It's incredible.
But now we live in a kind of there's no longer a naivete. There's no longer a comfort level between the artist, his or her Catholic identity, and the world of Hollywood, the world of film. It's something that immediately causes people to suspect their motives. Oh, they're going to make a message movie. Oh, they're going to try to make this film into a religious statement. Or, they hate the homosexual actor they're working with. Or, they would condemn the actress who had three abortions that they're working with. And all this kind of stuff enters into
which is beside the point
completely,
the making of the film.
But it's in the minds of many of the people that are in those communities.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, as you know, I've gotten involved in a small film production company bringing the work of Flannery O'Connor to the screen. And in that work, I have started to come to know some people that actually work in Hollywood and are successful in Hollywood.
Sure.
And there's a lot of faith in Hollywood that is not public.
Yeah. That doesn't necessarily surprise me because I found that true in media over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always surprised. In fact, I was at CNN just last week to be on a Canadian station, a Canadian network that happens to use some of the studios at CNN. So I was in Washington. And the woman who ushered us into the studio asked what we were doing there, and I said, well, I'm going to be on with Michael Korn. I'm going to be talking about dangers to the Catholic faith. I've just written a book. And she said, oh, I'm Catholic too. And so we start talking. The guy who does the makeup says, what are you doing? I say, I'm doing a book on, I wrote a book on Catholicism. Oh, I'm a Catholic. I really love this Pope. The two people that we actually started to talk to.
But you brought, your presence brought it out of them.
Well, yeah, I urge people just be transparent because you've got to be faithful to who you are. So you just say, what are we doing there? This is what I'm doing there. I'm not proselytizing. I'm just saying this is what I'm doing here. And it brought them out. Now, I've seen that over the years. Everywhere I go, I find Christians. And it's because doing their work.
You or I would go into a place, provide the occasion for people to engage that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing.
And they like to engage it, too, which is interesting.
Yes, they do. They really do.
Both of them showed evidence of enjoying the fact that they could, in their own small way, bear witness to their deepest commitments. My guest, Neil Hudson, we're talking about great Christmas films. Took a little diversion there, talking about Catholics in the film industry. We're going to come back and continue talking about some of the great, some of Neil's personal favorites. Also, some of the more offbeat adult Christmas films that are fun, like Four Christmases and The Family Stone that we've discussed already. Rare Exports, another one. And then we'll spend time looking at some of the great classics as well. I'm Al Cresta.